Hello, my name is Dave Emery, and this is Sod 2 of For the Record program number 684, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, business as usual in South Florida. Once again, it is my pleasure and privilege to bring back to our airwaves Daniel Hopsicker, the author of Welcome to Terrorland and the no longer available in print, Barry and the Boys, as well as numerous articles on the madcowprod.com website. Daniel, welcome back once again to our airwaves.
Hey, good to be with you.
You've been writing about not only activities in South Florida, Daniel, but you've been taking a look down at the Caribbean where the coral blue waters shine in the sunshine, blah, 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 blah. And you've got an article on the front page of your website. Every picture tells a story with a very modern-looking landing strip jutting out into this those marvelously beautiful, clear aqua Caribbean waters. And it really is, it's like straight out of Miami Vice, you know. It's just it is a very interesting picture and an evocative one. So you've been publishing some more about Citizen Boringer, about Citizen Brassington, and tell us about some of the people that have been involved with the Russian mob, because the stuff that's going on down there at Huffman Aviation, Venice Airport, and the other areas that you've been covering is part of an international network, and you've been once again reprising some of the players in that network for us.
Well, it was just in the news, interestingly enough. There was a British commission. Okay, but we have two pilots here that I've been tracking that I had no idea they were related, okay? There's this guy, Wolfgang Boringer, who Amanda Keller told me had been a close associate of Ada's, so close that Ada called Wolfgang Boringer my brother, okay? Wolfgang Boringer went, after 9/11, down to the South Pacific and started, was about to start a flight school on an island with only 100 people and no electricity. And the locals had discovered who he was from reading my website. They got in touch with me through my efforts and those of several associates of mine. The FBI was made aware that this guy was down there about to start a flight school to train nothing but pilots to fly DC-3s, okay, which is a smuggling aircraft. And the FBI put out a terror alert for Wolfgang Boringer. When Wolfgang Boringer was apprehended, the first words out of his mouth, according to the FBI agent that passed the story on to a member of the Joint Terrorism Task Force in New York City, in a conversation that was overheard by an associate of mine, this FBI agent said when they apprehended Wolfgang Boringer, he immediately went from being a 3 in terms of FBI interest to being a 9. And the first words out of Wolfgang Boringer's mouth were, "You can't arrest me." And something about that assertion must have been true, because Wolfgang Boringer was let go. And then the people that had apprehended him denied they'd ever found him, okay? So here we have a German pilot who Amanda Keller says knew Boringer in Germany, because it was obviously a relationship of long standing.
Who knew Ata in Germany.
Right. Thank you. Was a close associate of his in the States. Was the subject of an FBI terror alert. Was released from custody because he worked for the CIA. What that says about the CIA's relationship with Mohammed Ata is unknown to me, because, I mean, it could have been Wolfgang Boringer was reporting on Ada. It could have been Wolfgang Boringer and Ada were part of the same operation. Who knows? We don't know. But we do know that Wolfgang Boringer is someone that anyone that really wants to know what happened on 9/11 wants to know more about. Wolfgang Boringer then went, while Ada was in Florida, Wolfgang Boringer was the personal pilot for a man named Victor Kozeny, who I had never heard a word about before I learned that Boringer had been his personal pilot. And Kozeny, it turns out, was in business with Russian mobsters and very possibly the CIA in the looting of the Czechoslovakian economy after the fall of communism in the early 90s, and to the point where Kozeny eventually controlled one-third of the Czechoslovakian economy. stole half a billion dollars from Czechoslovakia, which he then used to attempt to gain control of the state oil company of Azerbaijan, which has probably one of the largest untapped oil supplies left in the world. He has been charged with felony fraud in New York City. The U.S. government has been half-heartedly attempting. Here's a guy who has stolen hundreds of millions of dollars from people like you and me, well, people wealthier than you and me, but like you and me, and he has successfully fought extradition for a half dozen years from his island in the Bahamas. So he's a master of the universe. In other words, the rules that apply to you and me don't apply to him, because he works for people and with people who are able to subvert governments. This is Wolfgang Borringer. Now, so Wolfgang Borringer and Otto were tight. Then we had this guy named Michael Brassington, who flew for Wally Hilliard. 39 weekly flights back down and back to Venezuela until the last one was caught with 43 pounds of heroin on board, the largest seizure of heroin in Central Florida history, which has to rank, you know, the largest seizure of heroin in Central Iowa history or Illinois history would be one thing, but this is Florida we're talking about. 43 pounds of heroin is heavyweight. Brassington didn't even make the DEA report on the bust. He goes on to an illustrious career. He's been in half a dozen scandals since. He was most recently he's about to go on trial in Newark, although they keep putting it off. Okay, and I'll say a word about that in a moment. He's about to go on trial in New York for 23 counts of putting passengers' lives in danger by doing what these people do, which is operating businesses without regard to the law. He had a Challenger plane that crashed in 2005 at Teterboro Airport, just about took one guy's head off. There was no loss of life through miraculous intervention, but there were serious injuries to a couple dozen people. After that, something that would put anyone like you or me in cold storage, he went down to the Turks and Caicos Island and became the personal pilot for the extremely corrupt thug premier of the Turks and Caicos, a guy by the name of Mike Misick. And he is flying Misick all over the world on several Gulf Streams that belong to a man named Joseph Watson, who was a special assistant to President Bill Clinton when Clinton was in office and was known as Clinton's man in Florida. The British government had devolved, the Turks and Caicos was a British government dependency until achieving something like independence in the 70s. And in a move that is unprecedented in the history of the British Empire, after releasing a dependency and spinning it off, they have now taken it back because of rampant corruption, systemic corruption in the government of the Turks and Caicos, led by thug premier Mike Misick. And I call him a thug premier because he's been credibly charged with rape, with intimidation, with beating his wife, who was an American TV actress, with no regard to the law, and not to mention flying around with Michael Brassington. So now we get to the nub of the current story, which is the British Commission appoints a commission of inquiry to go down there and investigate Mike Misick, and chief high among their list of things in their final report is his relationship with Michael Brassington. And what the heck the two of these guys were doing. This is Turks and Caicos has 30,000 citizens, most all of them dirt poor, and these guys have two or three Gulfstream jets that are flying all over the world. For what? They're wondering. And now here is the kicker. When the British Commission goes to publish its final report, the forces of a Eastern European Russian gangster oligarch, in other words, lawyers for this man, are able to redact the final report of this official British government commission.
Now, this is an official British government commission of high-level corruption in the former British property, for British colony of the Turks and Caicos Islands. And then, as a result of this institutionalized corruption, they take it back. But this Russian oligarch and mobster, a guy named Mario Hoffman, right? This is the gentleman we're talking about. He has such clout that he can force the redacting of this very, in effect, basically, a British government report on their former colony, which they took back because of this stink.
Is that amazing?
Yes. Yeah, even by the standards of behavior that you've been illuminating for us for, many years now, Danny. Yeah, that is a kicker. It really is wild.
So you're referencing the picture on the front page of the story. Every picture tells a story. It's titled. And what it is a 5,000-foot runway on a tiny atoll or island in the Turks and Caicos. It's nothing but a trampoline. It's a runway where jets can fly into from South America, refuel, and then go on to the U.S.
I think I can see Don Johnson driving alongside there in a sport utility vehicle with a silent submachine gun trying to catch up to a plane that's taken off.
Well, I'm glad you said Don Johnson and not Don Whittington, okay? Because I don't talk about Don Whittington anymore.
Now, the Whittingtons were partners of Barry Seal. Yeah, we haven't talked about them in a long time. Correct me if I'm wrong, but the Whittingtons were partners with Barry Seal. They were involved with the Iran-Contra activity. And when you began looking into Huffman Aviation and its related institutions down there, you found a bunch of aircraft that had previously been registered to the Whittingtons, right?
Well, in fact, Wally Hilliard's heroin flying Learjet, just as Barry Seal's Learjet, came from Don Whittington, who I don't talk about anymore, because I've heard stories that chill even my blood. Okay, even my blood. And what's the point? I mean, there just doesn't seem to be much point. So I don't talk about Don Whittington. If there is a Mr. Big, it isn't.
So he's the one whose name should not be mentioned.
If there is a Mr. Big, it isn't Whittington, okay?
All right. Just so we know that that's not the case.
That's right. So anyway, back to this British commission. So thank God, the only chance we have is the internet, okay? Because what has happened clearly is the forces of the elite and of organized crime have organized transnationally, networked, okay? And ordinary citizens are powerless unless they are able to now network in the same way, okay? To fight the this phenomenon. And there is a website called WikiLeaks, which I would recommend, that somebody leaked this unredacted report, and WikiLeaks published the damn thing, the whole report. So if you want to know what's been going on, and see, this is not a story about the Turks and Caicos. Okay, this is a story about America, because one of the allegations is that Misick was involved with Alan Stanford.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And Alan Stanford, of course, the Texas-based financier, now under indictment for allegedly running a huge, and this seems to be a happening thing these days, basically a huge Ponzi scheme, right?
That's correct. And might never have been caught had it not been for the economic downturn. So, that's the most recent story on my website. So, just to finish, I'm following these two pilots, Michael Brassington, who flew heroin for Wally Hilliard, and Wolfgang Boringer, who was a close associate of Muhammad Atta's. I have no inkling. I may have an inkling, but I have no proof that the two men have any association or even know each other until this unredacted report comes out, and I learn that Wolfgang Boringer was flying for Victor Kozeny, which I already knew, who was known because of the looting of Czechoslovakia as the Pirate of Prague. Well, the man who kept the British Commission report from coming out in full, Mario Hoffman, is riding around in has a sleek white yacht that patrols off the coast of the Turks and Caicos, and his yacht is called the Barracuda of Prague. And Mario Hoffman was the first registered stockbroker in Czechoslovakia after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and he grew fabulously wealthy in Viktor Kozeny's privatization voucher scheme. So, we are not looking at, some amorphous Russian mob connection. This is these guys, or Michael Brassington, who was still a close associate of Wally Hilliard's, according to a former U.S. Customs agent who's seen this file, and Wolfgang Boringer, who was a close enough associate of Mohammed Adas, for Adad referred to him frequently as my brother, have both been pilots for the Russian mob. You know, what that means is up for discussion, and I don't pretend to be the world's expert on this, but I do know that it is certainly more interesting to the story of what really happened on 9/11 than anything concerned with the melting point of steel.
Daniel, what is very clear is that Huffman Aviation and that complex of individuals and institutions that you've been investigating in Florida and with obviously epicenters in other parts of the United States, in turn, is part of what we've referred to so often, which is a global network. And an awful lot of it, I would say, from what we've been able to see, courtesy of you, that most of it actually lies, most of the clout, most of the resources actually lie outside of the United States. But it's obvious that Huffman Aviation is sort of one ball bearing in a much larger infernal machine.
Yeah, clearly. When I went to New Orleans, good Lord, it must be 10 years ago now, to begin researching Barry and the boys, I stumbled onto the main line with Barry Seal. The contra cocaine coming through Los Angeles, while certainly significant, was a sideshow compared to the $5 billion worth of cocaine Barry Seal brought into the country. And it's an act of God, I suppose, as much as anything else, that when 9/11 happened, and it turned out that three of the four terrorist pilots had learned to fly in Venice, that I immediately knew something was hinky because my own parents retired in Venice 30 years ago, and I would fly out from Los Angeles almost every winter because I loved my mom and dad, spend 3-4 nights with them, okay, down there in Venice and in this tiny town. And if by the third night I had gotten restless, which I've been known to do, and needed to go out and have a beer, that was absolutely nowhere to go in town and nothing to do. So I knew from personal experience that a 30-year-old terrorist, especially a 30-year-old terrorist in the last year of his life, would not choose Venice, Florida, to spend the last year of his life if he had any other choices. And certainly there's 220 flight schools in Florida alone. So the story that Mohammed Atta sent out inquiries to over 200 flight schools is just that, a story. It is a canard. The only two flight schools that Mohammed Atta went to before settling, or the only flight school Mohammed Atta went to before settling in Venice, was a flight school in Norman, Oklahoma, that had trained already a half dozen of Osama bin Laden's pilots, including Osama bin Laden's personal pilot. And perhaps what happened there was that flight school might have been a little too hot at that time, so Atta went to Venice, but he didn't do it. He didn't do it by his own, on his own. He didn't do it on his own. I can guarantee you that.
One of the things that you pointed out in Barry and the Boys is that when the investigative spotlight, so to speak, began to look at Huffman Aviation, and also I've forgotten offhand the name of the other fellow, Arne Krutoff,
Rudy Deckers.
Both Rudy Deckers and Arne Krutoff basically narrowly survived aircraft crashes, correct?
Correct, and Arne Krutoff later tried to take his own life.
The point being that there may be a reason why people are reluctant to pursue these networks, and the lawsuits on the receiving end of which you've been, and far worse things lie in the wings, pun intended, for those who might want to pursue some of these things. And I guess failing all else, you could be confronted with death in Venice, so to speak.
what I called one early story. You know, on a lighter note, on a slightly lighter note.
All right.
Okay. You remember? Everybody remembers Rudy Dekkers. Rudy Dekkers was the man who, after the 9/11 attack, told us who Muhammad Atta was. He was on every newscast. Probably in the free world and probably in the not-so-free world as well, explaining who Muhammad Atta was at length, at absolute length. And yet, when I found out that this man was an international criminal who could not, whose reputation was so bad in Naples, where he spent most of his time at the Naples airport, his reputation was so bad that nobody there would sell him airplane gas for cash, okay? I thought, well, how could this possibly be that we took this man's word, that several congressional committees who he lied through his teeth to took his word? Recently, somebody in the Netherlands got in touch with me and told me that Rudy Dekkers had been on a TV show over there. But it wasn't like a documentary about 9/11. In the Netherlands, they have a TV show called Dutch is the hardest language in the world to say anything in. Spoorless, and it means search. And what it is a TV show that looks for people's lost relatives. Okay? And it turns out that Rudy Dekkers has a son in the Netherlands who he has never met. That Rudy Dekkers, that this man's mother was pregnant with him for 3 months when Rudy Dekkers went to her and told her that he had another girlfriend. And Dekkers left, moved to Florida, and has ever since refused to meet his own son. Now, and I'm going to publish, I've gotten a translation of this Dutch TV show. And I'm going to use it to do the only thing I can do, really, which is embarrass and hopefully humiliate Rudy Dekkers in front of the world.
What sort of time frame was this when Rudy fathered this son and then split? What time frame are we looking at?
This is the mid-'80s.
Okay, so the kid would be in his early 20s now.
Yeah, the kid is...
Kid is no longer a kid.
Yeah, his mother told him who his father was the day after the 9/11 attack. because his dad was all over TV.
Uh-huh.
And apparently he had learned a few years earlier that his father owned a flight school in Florida. And he'd sent him some emails, which he never received a response to.
Mm-hmm.
And Dekkers is now married. His own wife, who... was universally praised as being a very nice lady, divorced him in Naples, and he has since married a Cuban girl who, in some significant fashion, it belongs to the family of one of the founders or owners or one of the men that runs Emory Riddle University. In the aviation super university over on the east coast of Florida, and she's from Cuba. And what that all means, I couldn't tell you.
Well, it would be interesting to find out a little bit more about her background and whether or not, basically, it is as this broadcast is titled, "Business as Usual" in South Florida. Because certainly, clandestine commerce and Cuba are no strangers, even after the ascension of Castro. Although it appears to have been ramped down somewhat.
It was owned, wasn't it, by Meyer Lansky, and according to Reader, no less an authority than Reader's Digest.
Right.
When Meyer Lansky died, the syndicate was taken over by a man named Alvin Malnick.
Alvin of Arabia.
Now, I would not say that, of course, but Reader's Digest said that. And Alvin Malnick has surfaced again in the news recently. First of all, Alvin Malnick was one of the grateful beneficiaries of the $300 million looting of mob-run pension funds. And by the way, just by the by, I'll mention that there I have traced five major financial frauds, Ponzi schemes, pension lootings, to people associated with Huffman Aviation at the Venice Airport, and they have looted from the American economy over $1 billion. That includes this pension fund thing, Art Nadell's Ponzi scheme, that includes Wally Hilliard's $100 million he's being sued for in Wisconsin, that includes the $300 million that Adnan Khashoggi is alleged to have stolen by the SEC from a company called Genesis Intermedia, which owned one of the jets that was being used to fly tons of cocaine in and out of, into the country.
But by the way, you know what Alvin Malnick has been involved in very recently and in the news in connection with very recently?
Well, why don't you tell me? Because I've been talking too much.
Well, you know, of course, the news has just been obsessing on the death of Michael Jackson, the, quote, king of pop. But there are a lot of interesting stories, including some of the shady figures around him. And one of the people who was named one of the multiple executors of his estate is Alvin Malnick. And there are a lot of questions about that estate and in particular, the licensing of the hundreds of millions of dollars worth of songs, which might get licensed. And so there's a lot of dineros at stake there. And one of the people that's going to be helping to sort through those piles of dineros, or at least prospective dineros, is none other than Alvin Malnick, or Alvin of Arabia, as you called him.
That's, you know, and probably if the most obscene fact, the most obscene thing I've heard, I'm sure there's more obscene things I've heard, but as obscene as anything I've ever heard is the fact that Alvin Malnick a few years ago got control of Michael Jackson's song catalog, which included all of the Beatles hits.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that the mob owns Here Comes the Sun, and all we are saying is give peace a chance, is just too bitter for words.
Well, there may be something even worse. Well, I don't know about even worse, but one of the things that's now becoming an element of journalistic speculation is that a newly published subsidiary of Bertelsmann Music may start bidding for licensing rights, and one of the lines of speculation is that they're going to try to gain control of that library. Bertelsmann was the publisher for the SS in World War II, and behind it is the largest English language publisher. Their Random House subsidiary is the largest English language publisher, and they appear to have retained all of their Nazi and SS character behind the scenes. So it may actually be that not the mob, but the Third Reich, basically an underground Reich, will be talking about Here Comes the Sun. And they put a particular construction on that phrase.
Well, you know, I have a personal anecdote.
But by the way, Dan, we are almost out of time.
Let me just finish with this, personal anecdote about Bertelsmann. Of course, nothing I do warrants the attention of a major publisher here in the U.S. That goes without saying. But both of my books were published in Germany by a company that then was bought several years ago by Bertelsmann. So I have absolutely no hope that any of my books will ever get published in Germany again. Yeah, so it's a sad day.
Well, Daniel, it may be a sad day, but you're continuing to report on the strange sun that rises and sets over South Florida. Tell us your website, Daniel, then we got to rip.
MadCowProd.com, and the new one, the blog where you can see video is DanielHopsicker.tv.
Daniel, continuing to follow the turning of these infernal wheels in South Florida and elsewhere, part of a machine that operates around the world. This concludes Side 2 of For the Record program number 684, interview with Daniel Hopsicker, business as usual in South Florida. This program is being recorded on August 9th of 2009. For Daniel Hopsicker, this is Dave Emery saying thanks for listening.